Verse 56. This verse 56 is about the world that Prabhupada lives in. Sri Akanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kapataravo Druma Bhumishchintamani Ganamai Toyamamritam Kataganam Natyagamanam Apivam Shri Priyasaki Chidanandam Jyoti Param Apitarashwadyam Apicha Sayacha Shiraddi Shabati Surabhibhyascha Sumahan Nimeshardakyo Vavrajati Nahiyatrapi Samhaya Vajay Shweta Dripam Tamaham Ihago Lokamatiyam Vidantaste Santashiti Virla Chara Katipaye. So now he told us about the wheel of karma, and you get out of karma by doing bhakti bhajan, and he told the different forms of bhakti bhajan. And if you perfect your bhakti bhajan, then where do you go? Goloka Vrindavan, the supreme abode of Lord Krishna, which is described in this verse. Very systematic presentation. Brahma Samhita. I worship that transcendental seat known as Shweta Dweep, where as loving consorts, the Lakshmis, in their unalloyed spiritual essence, practice the amorous service of the Supreme Lord Krishna as their only lover, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem, all water is nectar, every word is a song, every gate is a dance, the flute is the favorite attendant, effulgence is full of transcendental bliss, and the supreme spiritual entities are all enjoyable and tasty. Where numberless milk cows always emit transcendental oceans of milk, where there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away for even the space of half a moment. That realm is known as Goloka, only to a very few self-realized souls in this world. Purport. That region which jivas attain by the best performance of their rasa bhajan, though purely transcendental, is by no means devoid of variegatedness. In other words, it's not all one. It's full of variety in the spiritual world. The non-differentiated region is attained by indulging. Oh, in other words, the Brahma Jyoti. By indulging in anger, fear, and delusion. The devotees attain Goloka, the transcendental region above Vaikuntha, according to the quality of their ras of their respective services. In reality, that region is no other than Swetadweep, or the White Island, being exceedingly pure. Those who attain the highest rasa in the shape of realization of pure devotion in this world, viewing the reality of Shwetadweep and Gokul, Vrindavan, and Navadweep within this mundane world, designate the same as Goloka. In other words, those that are performing Bhava Bhakti, they see in this world Vrindavan and Navadweep are the same, and the same pastimes, Prakriti Leela they see here are the same pastimes that are going on in Swetadweep, Navadweep, and Vrindavan in the spiritual world. In that transcendental region of Goloka, there are always visible in their supreme beauty all the distinctive entities that are incorporated in the pure cognitive principle, namely the lover and his loved ones. In other words, in the spiritual shakti, chinmaya shakti. The lover and his beloved ones, trees and creepers. In other words, all these things are totally spiritual. Spiritual trees, spiritual creepers, spiritual mountains, rivers, forests, water, speech, movement, music of the flute, sun and moon, taste and taste, the wonders of the 64 aesthetic arts, milk cows yielding nectarine flow of milk, and transcendental ever-existing time. In other words, it's eternal present in the spiritual world. There's no past and there's no future. Descriptions that supply the clue to Goloka are found in various places in the Vedas and other shastras, such as Puranas, Tantras. In other words, this spiritual region where Krishna resides with his eternal associates is described in many, many scriptures, such as Padma Puran, Skanda Puran, and and other places. And here it cites one verse from Chandogya, which is translated next verse, paragraph. The sum and substance of it is, in other words, what this verse says, is that all the variegatedness of the mundane world and much more variety over and above the mundane are to be found in Goloka. Yeah, I mean, here we have trees. There they have trees. But they have much more variety of trees than they have here. They have trees there that have emerald trunks and diamond fruits. The trunks are made of emeralds and the fruits are made of diamonds. And they have trees there that instead of having flowers in the tree, they have garlands in the tree. Put the ladies out of business here. The little garland makers will be out of business. No, they still make garlands there also. But there are trees there that are hanging, there are flower garlands hanging in the trees. And there are sari trees there too. So there are much more variety there. The variety in the transcendental world is fully centralized. That means it's harmonious. Whereas in the mundane world, it is not so, and hence productive of weal and woe. In other words, all the variety of the mundane world is disjointed and unharmonious, and it's mixed with happiness and unhappiness. The centralized variety of Goloka, or the harmonious variety, is unalloyed and full of transcendental cognitive joy. It's pure and full of transcendental ecstasy. The Vedas and sadhus practicing devotion revealed by the Vedas, by availing the support of their individual cognitional aptitude actuated by devotion, may have a sight of the divine realm, and by the power of the grace of Krishna, their tiny cognitive faculty attaining the quality of infinitude, they're enabled to be on the level of the plane of enjoyments of Krishna. So be it. So that's very clear. It doesn't require any explanation. In other words, devotees following the path of Rag Bhakti, they will follow the descriptions in the Shastras, and they will do meditation, they will meditate on the pastimes of the Lord, and gradually become more attached and more purified, and the pastimes of the Lord will appear in their mind and heart in the form of spurti or visions. Given by the mercy of the Lord, they will be given a vision of the transcendental world, and that will encourage them more and more in their bhajan, and that's what that says, basically. They'll see the Lord's pastimes and the purified core of their heart as they advance in bhakti. There is a hidden meaning of the proposition, even the supreme. Proposition, even the supreme, that is also nevertheless the object of enjoyment. Param apitat ashwadyam apicha. The word paramapi indicates that Sri Krishna is the only truth absolute in all transcendental blissful principles, and tad ashwadyam means his object of enjoyment. In other words, that in the translation of the taste and the tasted, ashwadyam means taste. So in other words, Krishna, he is rasovaisaha, he is full of rasa, he is full of taste and devotional mellows and pleasures, loving sentiments and taste, but he also desires to taste, and so he expands himself into different devotees so he can taste himself. So he expands his Ladini Shakti into the form of Radharani so that he can taste the taste of prema. It's a little inconceivable, but that's what is being said here. The glory of Radha's love for Krishna, tasty quality, rasa of Krishna, that is realized by Radha, and the bliss which Radha is conscious in the process of such realization, all these threefold bhavas becoming available for the enjoyment of Krishna, he attains his personality, Sri Gaura Sundar. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati chooses to take this line from the Sanskrit, tad ashwadyam api, which is in the verse, and he says this indicates Lord Chaitanya's appearance, which is a very brilliant tika by our Param Guru. Very sweet, just by taking this principle of Rasaraj Mahabhav. Mahabhav, the personification of rasa in its highest embodied form, is Srimati Radharani. She personifies and exemplifies the highest presentation of divine love that's beyond the conception even of the source of that love. It's inconceivable even to Krishna, who's the very source of Radharani herself. So then, attracted by the inconceivable love, he wants to taste that love. So he tastes that love in the relationship of Radha and Krishna, Rasaraj and Mahabhav, but at the same time it creates a fascination and a captivation within his own mind and heart to understand, what is she feeling by tasting my love? So he very beautifully takes this word, paramapi tarashwadyamapicha. He said this indicates Gaurasundara. It is also this that constitutes a transcendental bliss of delicious loving rasa service manifested by Sri Gaurasundara. This also eternally exists only in the self-same Shvetadvip. So Shvetadvip means also Navadvip. So he's taking this verse, Shvetadvip, to indicate the Nitya Navadvip, the eternal abode of Lord Chaitanya, and the eternal abode of Radha and Krishna, where one can experience his tasty flavors of ras, serving Gaurasundara and Nitya Lila in your Nitya Kaishora Brahman Rup, and serving Radha and Krishna in Nitya Lila in your eternal Sarup. Because we see in this verse that the description of the spiritual world of Goloka looks very much like the description of the world we live in. There's the sun and the moon, and there's land, and there's trees, and there's rivers, and there's cows. So we may not understand so clearly. So in Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami gives a little bit of explanation. In this word, it talks about, in this verse, it says the word jyoti, refulgence. So it says that in the spiritual world, there's an eternal sun and an eternal moon, which are always existing and always present there. And there's also day and there's night. But here in the day and the night it brings fear, and the day it removes fear. But in the night, no one's afraid there in Vrindavan. They're not afraid that dacoits will come or any bad elements will come. In fact, some personalities, they like the night very much. The gopas, the coward boys, they don't like the night because they go to sleep and they dream and they miss Krishna very much. They feel great separation from Krishna after being with him all day. So they're a little bit afraid of the night because they fear the separation from their beloved Krishna, Gopal. Now the gopis, they're counting the minutes till the sun goes down. And they're very happy when the night comes. In fact, the favorite of all the 30 days in the month, the favorite day of Radharani is Amavasya. Amavasya is a dark moon day, dark moon night. There's no moon because it's black, and Krishna is black, and she likes everything that's black. So in Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami explains that the delightful sun and moon are eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. They are not material, and they are different from the sun and moon in so many ways. For example, the material moon waxes and wanes. In other words, it gets big and small, appearing as a full moon on only one day a month. In Goloka Vrindavan, however, each night the moon is full, and it never wanes. So maybe there's no, in the spiritual world, maybe there's no Amavasya. But in this world, it's described Radharani likes Amavasya very much. In the Gautamiya Tantra, it explains like this. In Goloka Vrindavan, there are a spiritual sun and moon. There, a full moon rises each night, for the moon never wanes. So then another thing, it says that time is conspicuous by its absence. So Jiva says that this means that the residents of Goloka are so absorbed in love of Krishna and so enthralled and captivated by their pastimes with him that they forget about time. This phrase should not be interpreted to mean that there's no sequence of events in the spiritual world. For if this were so, it would be impossible for the Lord to enjoy pastimes there with his devotees. In other words, there is a sequence. Krishna does one thing, and then in the future he does another thing. And then what he's doing now becomes a past when he enters into the future. But it's kind of an eternal present. Nothing fades or disappears. And they always feel like it's new. Every time Krishna goes out to the pasturing grounds, it feels like a new experience, like he never went out before. So it's always fresh and always new. So then Vishnu Chakravarti explains about the speech. In this line, it says that the speech of the residents, that their words are like, their speech is like singing, right? Every word is a song. Every gait is a dance. Their walking is dancing. Their speaking is singing. The water is nectar. The soil is chintamani, gems. Every tree is a wish-fulfilling tree. So Vishwanath explains, very wonderful, this is in Brajavati Chintamani, about the language of the spiritual world. So we have a word in our world called Matsarya. Parmo ne Matsarya Satam. It says that the Bhagavatam is meant for those that are near Matsarya. Matsarya means envious, and Nirmatsa means free from envy. So the Paramahamsas who are free from envy, they can really relish and enjoy the nectarian descriptions of the Bhagavatam. So the word Matsara means envy. So when the Brijvasis, when they say the word Matsara, they don't mean envy, but they mean my lake. Matsara. Sara means, the word Sara means lake, and Mat means my. So when they say Matsara, it doesn't mean envy, because there's no envy there. And when the Brijvasis say the word Pradosh, dosh means like faults. Like we say, dosh means faults. It doesn't mean fault, and they do not mean rascal, but they mean moon. When the Brijvasis say Raja, they do not mean material passion like Rajagun, but they mean the pollen from flowers. When they say Tamaha, they don't mean ignorance like Tamagun, but they mean the pleasant darkness of night. When they say Dwandvam, like we say, like Advaitacharya, Dwait, Dwandam means duality. It does not mean material dualities of happiness and distress, but it means a happy couple. In other words, Dwandvam. Dwandvam means, duality, but they say it means two people that are they're happily together, Dwandvam. Happy couple. When the Brijvasis say the word danda, like we say sannyasi danda, it doesn't mean the king's rod of chastisement, but rather it means the handle of a chamara whisk. So now it describes something about Nandishwar Hill. The homes of all the coward men are on both sides of Nandishwar Hill. Lord Shiva offers respectful obeisances to that hill. Each coward's house is surrounded by a wall of jewels. And there's jeweled entranceways and many gates studded with pearls and other jewels. Seeing these coward men's homes, human beings say that they're more beautiful than the residence of the demigods. And the demigods, when they see them, they say they're better than the residence of Vaikuntha. And when the Vaikunthavasis see them, they say they're better than the sweetest of nectars. Within the walls of the coward's men's compounds, they're the homes of a gatekeeper and the pujaris and other associates. Around the coward men's homes, there are many other houses, marketplaces, roads leading in many directions. Near the entrances of the city are many crossroads and marketplaces, and there are many stores, storehouses of jeweled necklaces, and splendid flags for different occasions, and flower garlands. Oh, these are just different stores there. There's jewelry stores and flag stores, pearl stores, and flower garland stores that have flower garlands as big as trees. Pretty big garland. they're offered for sale. This is a small-time operation out front of the temple. Little basket of a few flowers, but they have this big time up there. Filled with fragrant spring flowers, these marketplaces are like many hills of aromatic substances. Actually, if you ever go to Rajasthan, to the desert, there's a village called Natwar. It's a village of Srinathji, and Natwar means the gateway to Nathji, or the gateway to God, the door of God. And it's on top of a hill. Maybe it has another name. It's like a butte or a boot or something like that. Butte. But that village of Natwar, where Nathji reigns, is very much reminds one of Vrindavan, at least old-time Vrindavan. There's very small alleys and small streets there in Natwar, and they're very fragrant. The streets are very fragrant because there's many, they're selling lots of Mahaprasadam from Nathji out there. So that's, of course, very fragrant. The fragrance of the natural substances offered to the Lord, mixed with the beautiful sweet nectar of his lotus lips. So that's going through the air. And then there's the fragrance of many incense and oil wallas, or many, what they call attar wallas. They're selling, I'm talking about Natwar, the village of Natwar. So the atmosphere is, the marketplace is very, very fragrant, and there's many incense being burned. And just to walk up and down the small lanes, everywhere they're selling deity paraphernalia and deity outfits and pictures of Nathji and Yamunaji and Vallabhacharya, etc. It's very pleasurable experience, much like what Vrajavati Chintamani here is describing about the spiritual world, that there's so many shops there in Nandagram, and the marketplaces are like many hills of aromatic substances. There is a jeweler's shop glistening as a mine full of precious gems. So they have jewelry shops there, and I guess like here, the ladies go shopping there in Nandagram, in the spiritual world, and the men. And they go in the jewelry shops and they buy all kinds of jewelry and they barter for jewelry. But they're really stocked like mines full of precious gems. And there are other shops where aromatic substances such as musk and kunkum are sold. When you read this description, it very much reminds one of Natwar. Because they have some places where they sell these all these different stones. There's these stones they get from the desert, different kinds of stones, and then they break them in half and they crush them and they're fragrant. They're called amber. You ever hear that? Amber? Amber and I don't know, different kind of stones they have. And they're like incense. They're really incredible things. So it's a nice experience. So in this verse in 56, we're describing the spiritual world. And also in the verse, Brahma calls it Shvetadvip. But Shweta, not only does Shweta means white, but also means pure, that the Goloka Vrindavan is an abode of pure rasa. There's no contamination there. There's no impurity there. Everything is simply a blissful abode of happiness, with the center being Krishna. So in verse 57, we can read that, Atavacha Mahavishnur Bhagavantam Prajapatim Brahman Mahatva Vigyane Prajasarge Chinmati Pancha Shlokam Imam Vidyam Vatsadatam Nibodame. So on hearing these hymns containing the essence of the truth, the Supreme Lord said to Brahma, Brahma, if you experience the inclination to create offspring by being endowed with the real knowledge of the glory of Godhead, listen, my beloved, from me to the science set forth in the following five shlokas. So, in this verse, Krishna is empowering Brahma because he had some desire. He's considered to be a Sakama Bhakta. Sakama means he had his own desire. From his last life, he had the desire to be the creator again, so that's his desire. So he's doing all this austerity and chanting Gopal mantra And then, but at the same time, he's holding on to his personal desire. So the Lord has given him darshan. He's seen everything and realized a whole lot. But at the same time, he has this unfulfilled desire. So the Lord empowers him in this verse. He says, all right, you can do your work of creation. But now listen to what I have, something I want to teach you. So then Krishna goes on and in the conclusion of the Brahma Samhita to basically teach Brahma like a disciple to try to bring him out of Sakama Bhakti to the platform of pure Bhakti or Nishkam, no material desires. So this is the teachings of Govinda that were directly received by Brahma. So this is, you could say, this is the beginning of the Brahma Sampradaya. The knowledge that Brahma received came from Krishna. Krishna is the Adi Guru, and Brahma is the Adi Guru of our Brahma Sampradaya. So he received this knowledge, the sacred knowledge about bhakti directly from Krishna, right here. This is it. This is his class. It was a brief class, apparently brief. It's five verses, five sentences. And he explained the basic principles of bhakti there. The purport. So basically in these next verses from 58 to 62, Krishna's explaining to Brahma how he can become a pure devotee from the platform of Sakama Bhakti to Nishkam. Purport. The Supreme Lord became propitious when Brahma, with great eagerness, chanted the names Krishna and Govinda, expressive of the form, attribute, and pastimes. Brahma was actuated by the desire for mundane creation. In other words, the material desire to create was in Brahma's heart. Krishna then said to Brahma how pure, unalloyed devotion can be practiced by souls engaged in worldly occupations, by combining the same with the desire for carrying out the behest of the Supreme Lord. In other words, he explained that, all right, you have a material desire, that's Sakama Bhakti, but you can also advance on the platform of devotion by fulfilling your desire, but at the same time keep my desires in mind and try to work for my pleasure also. So then he explains, the knowledge absolute is knowledge of the glory of Godhead. If you want to procreate offspring being endowed with such knowledge, listen attentively to the science of devotion that is contained in the following five shlokas. So then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati writes, how bhakti is practiced by performing worldly duties in the form of carrying out the commands of the Supreme Lord is being described. So this is Brahma's position. He's a Sakama Bhakti. In other words, you combine your karmic desires with the desire to carry out the order of the Lord. And work for me, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So this whole section here, Jiva Goswami says this applies for someone who is not Swarup Siddhi realized. One who has not realized their spiritual form, which is probably most of us, then we have to work in the context of the body and mind which we are inhabiting, which is not exactly our Swarup. It's our Karma Roop, our Sadhaka Roop, which is propelled and made of different karmas, tama, ignorance, passion, and goodness. So we have to work with that, what we have, under order of Guru, and the direction, and going towards the direction of pure devotion. So he's explaining, he says that Krishna is giving a convenient way for Brahma to follow this, to come, because he hasn't come to this platform. So you'll see in these next few verses, like this next verse, 58 is Sambandha Avideya Prayojana, and then 59 talks about three different ways to attain the goal, then prema bhakti, and then finally 61 is gona dharma and mukhya dharma. These are basic subjects that are discussed. So he doesn't, Jiva Goswami doesn't have many comments on this verse. I have a few notes from the class we took. Krishna is, in these verses, Krishna is speaking in response to Brahma. Brahma, in other words, Brahma is standing before the Lord. He's realized the Lord by meditation. And in that sportier meditation, he's having his own internal darshan. And he's offering all these prayers, Govindamani Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So now he's offered so many prayers, 56 prayers. So it's reciprocal. It's personal. Krishna's a person. Brahma's a person. So now Krishna's responding to the heartfelt prayers that have been offered with great attachment. So then Krishna begins by explaining how, all right, fulfill your desire to create. Okay, I empower you to do that. But now listen, I want to benefit you. I want to give you more than that. I want to give you more than just empowerment. I want to teach you how to attain the direct mercy. So in this verse, there's the word vatsa. In 57, it says, pancha shlokam imam vidyam vatsa datam nibodame. So this word vatsa, as you know from Bhagavatam, vatsa sura, vatsa means a little calf. It means a baby calf. But it also has the meaning, just like we say, vatsalya. But vatsa means beloved. So it's a very, very intimate word that Krishna is using for Brahma. He's saying, hey, vatsa. Sometimes you read in Rasa Shastra's Mother Yashoda, she refers to Krishna as vatsa. Oh, vatsa. I think if you've read Govinda Lilamrita or Krishna Bhavanamrita attentively, you would see these words sometimes used by Yashodarani. Hey, vatsa. Or she tells the older boys to watch out, to guard her vatsa, her beloved. So in the class we had, this shows how dear Brahma is to Krishna by the fact that Krishna is addressing him as vatsa. Vatsa, oh my beloved. It's actually really a sweet exchange of ras. And when you think about it, that Brahma, he is, his prayers have a lot of Aishvarya Gyan in them. He's saying, oh, you're Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchinananda Vigraha, Anadi Radhi, you're the cause of all causes, the greatest of the greatest. And from you is Shambhu, and he tells us all this tattva, and we went through all these different tattvas. And Krishna is there. I mean, you have to remember, he's not addressing Vishnu or Narayan or Chaturbhuj Narayan. He's addressing Govinda with the flute and the calf and the cows and a little bit of rice in his hand, in his left hand with some rice and some fruits and yogurt mixed together. Very casual boy, very beautiful boy, a very simple, happy boy. And so Krishna's listening, yes, yes, yes. And Brahma is offering all these prayers and beautiful Sanskrit prayers. Then he says, hey, vatsa. He's almost like, hey, my coward friend. Hey, my little friend. And Brahma's got these four heads and this massive figure, you know. So the first thing Krishna responds by using a very, very intimate and sweet word. He says, hey, my beloved, listen. So this is a very sweet point that's there just in one word, that Krishna kind of disarms Brahma from his opulence and his grandeur and his awe and his reverence. It's like someone is standing before you in folded hands, and you know, you're a general in an army or something, and someone's there, yes sir, yes sir. You say, oh, that's okay, and you put your arm around the guy, don't worry about it. He goes, oh, you know, you couldn't imagine, you know, you're like a 5-star general, and he's, you know, he's just new in the army. He's, yes, sir, yes, sir. That's okay. Come on, let's go get, you know, something to eat. Let's go get a drink, you know. And the guy's shaking. Oh, what do you mean? You got your arm around me like a friend or like you're my father? So it's this kind of, you know, Krishna just, you know. So that's kind of like, that's what preaching is like that. Preaching is the art of disarming people and penetrating people's veneers, their psychological shells and different coverings. That's the expertise of the preacher, as we heard from some verses from Bhagavatam. Prabhupada explained when in 7th canto of Bhagavatam, when he's talking about the nine limbs of bhakti, he says that the preachers of Krishna conscious movement, they are generally situated on the platform of Sakyam and Atmanivedanam, which these two limbs of bhakti are on the platform of Rag Marg. Shravanam, Kirtan, Vishnu, Smaranam, all the way to Dasyam, and full realization how one is a servant of Krishna, and Krishna is their master. Jivara Sarupaya Krishna Nityadas, Ekal Ishvara Krishna Arasabhya Vrittya. These type of ideas fully realized and incorporated in one's actions and feelings, that's the perfection of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, which will bring one to that point of Dasya Bhav, which of course is not a small time realization. This is where Raghunuga Bhakti begins, because on the platform of Dasya Bhav, or servitude, there's a certain distance. The master and the servant, there's a certain respect, a certain distance, a certain formality, there's certain rules, there's certain regulations, there's certain etiquette, there's certain behaviors. But when there's friendship is, depending on the extent and depth of the friendship, which develops to the point of, you know, doing anything for your friend, which is Atmanivedanam, giving your own body for your friend, or giving anything for your friend. So that's the fullest development of friendship, which finds its expression, of course, in Madhurya Ras. Because Sakyam is this platform of Rag. Rag Bhakti begins with this mood of friendship, that you have a friendly feeling towards the Lord, that you realize the Lord, and you're attached to the Lord to such an extent that you're attached to the Lord, and the Lord's attached to you. And you trust in the Lord and are aware of the Lord as your friend to such an extent that you know that He won't let you down, and you're not afraid of Him, and you feel that He understands, and He's very much close to you. So this is Rag Marg. So the devotees, the real preachers, are those devotees that are situated in this platform, Sakyam Atmanivedanam. And they're able to very easily disarm people and make friends with people. That's one of the key qualities of an advanced devotee, is that they're very simple. They're very simple in their presentation of themselves. They're not complicated. They're very simple, and they're very transparent, and they're very friendly. And not in an artificial way, like being popular or studying some books on how to be a friend or something like that. How to win friends and influence people, smile a lot and say nice things. It's not like that. Their friendship emanates from the realization of their friendly relationship with God, their friendly relationship with Krishna. And they perceive their friend coming before them in different forms. Their friend comes before them in the form of a million Africans, or a million French people, or a million Russian people, or a million German people. It doesn't matter. Wherever they go, they feel their friends are everywhere. So they're able to treat everyone in a very friendly mood. It's one of the kind of universal experiences people have had around the world, is that they often meet a preacher, and then they feel like they know him. They've known him for years. And I've heard like that sometimes the people, devotees would be, I mean, very, and then good devotees, advanced devotees, had some realization. Maybe it's by the virtue of the service they're empowered for that in that way. But they'll meet people, they'll meet people and befriend people, and people say, "Wow, so I feel like I've known you all my life," or they even feel like, "Don't I know you?" Or aren't you? They mistake the preachers for their cousins or their friends, and aren't you so and so? And it's so. This is kind of one point that just we're thinking about the way Krishna is so friendly towards Brahma in this regard. So, Bhaktisanta Saraswati, in this purport here, he's explaining that although Brahma is influenced by this passionate desire to create, out of his compassion, Krishna is going to explain to him how through pure devotional service he can dovetail his material tendencies in the service of the Lord. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, the second canto, for those who remember, there's some account how Brahma, he's asking the Lord, please, to protect him from material desires while he's creating. And the Lord assured him that he would be protected. So this is an interesting feature that reminds us of Srila Prabhupada. He used to say that you Western boys and girls are not very afraid of Maya. You go about your moving and dealing in the material world and doing different activities, but you should always pray to Krishna. At every moment we should pray to Krishna, because Maya is very strong. We can be overcome or overpowered at any minute. Even Lord Brahma, we see Lord Brahma is going about his service. We have our service. We have different services we do in the material world, maintaining families, or maintaining ourselves, or teaching, or whatever we do. Those are actions and services that we're dovetailing in the service of Krishna, but we're working in the material world with our material minds and bodies, in the material energy, as was Lord Brahma when he was creating. But he understood that I'm creating means I'm contacting all this energy, all this material energy, and it's dangerous. And I may forget you, and I may lose sight of why I'm doing this, and what's the purpose behind this. And what is it, why am I? I may start to think, well, actually, I'm the creator, and I'm the doer, which we see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. There's the whole discussion between Narada and Brahma. How even Narada became, the son of Brahma, thought that Brahma was the creator. He thought that dad was everything. He thought that his father was everything. Then his father said, well, really, sorry, you got it all wrong. Actually, I'm not the creator. I'm simply the instrument. Beyond me, the creative power is coming from beyond me. He said, really? I thought it was you. I thought you did the whole deal. You know? So, this Brahma is there praying to the Lord, please don't let me forget you. So, what to speak of ourselves? That how easy it is to forget the Lord from moment to moment. And how, like Lord Brahma, our guru of gurus of gurus, is teaching us to always pray and always pray and always pray. Krishna, please don't let me forget you. Krishna, please let me remember you. Because at every moment we can be assaulted with forgetfulness. So this is what is called sadhana bhakti. When one comes to Bhava Bhakti, then the battle is over. The battle is basically over. But until one reaches that level of devotion, there is definitely a fight. And it's not a small-time fight. It's a big-time fight. At the end of the purport, Bhaktisanta Saraswati makes a point that the following verses will describe dovetailing material duties in Krishna's service.